It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier. It's a beautiful day for a couple reasons, John. First of all, it's beautiful outside. We're in the middle of the Mets. We're not sure when this is going to post, but we're in the middle of our Mets series. We just started the series off last night.
This is Tuesday after the great game against the Mets last night. Down 4-0, come back to win 5-4 with the help of our guest that's coming up here.
The real MVP of last night's game, Dusty Wathan. How you doing, Dusty?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Great start to the season. So, I couldn't be better right now.
Yeah, top two. Dusty is an avid listener of the podcast. Nice. We found that out a couple years ago.
You're the one.
Because we're thinking like nobody's listening to us. And then all of a sudden, Dusty said, "Hey, Brage, I love the podcast." I'm like, "Uh-oh." I went back to you and I said, "Tom, we got to be careful what we say about the team. Not that we ever talk baseball."
Yeah, now we know not to rip the third base coach on our podcast.
We can never do that again.
That wouldn't be Philly if you didn't rip me, though.
Exactly. Hey, Dusty, let's get into it. Last night, Phillies are down 4-0 against the Mets. JT hits a 2-run home run. Castellanos gets on. They're two outs. Just go through the process. What are you thinking at that point, standing out there in that situation?
Well, I mean, first thing you're going to do is going to check the outfielders, see where they're at. They had Reese played towards the gap in left center, which is kind of unusual. Normally, the left fielder be played more towards the line. So you're thinking, okay, how am I going to score him from first base on a double? I mean, that's my immediate thought every time there's a guy on first base in a situation where we need a run or we need to add on runs. And, you look at the spots where you can think you can score him, and it looked like it was going to be probably right center, right field line, and maybe in left field line. And, Reese hits the ball down left field line, and, Costa got a great jump, and he was flying. I think on our post-game report, the fastest sprint speed of anybody in the game yesterday. So he was running real well. And, in that situation, you got to kind of take a chance. And, you can't bank on us getting another hit, even though, thank goodness we did. Didi comes through. But, you got to try to tie the ball game up, make them make a play, and worked out good for us.
Was that Smith in left field, too?
No, that was
who's playing left?
Connor.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to ask, too. You're evaluating, obviously, the speed of your player that's on first, but you're also – saying, all right, if the ball goes to the left fielder, how good is that guy's arm or how good is the right fielder's arm, right? So you're assessing several things that are going through your calculation before Reese even gets up to bat.
Yeah, and all that's been done, that was done Monday morning, Monday afternoon, and then, one more time probably before we go out for the game, and then also have some reports on the iPad in the dugout on strength of arms and, how guys go left and right, and obviously you've watched a bunch of videos. So it's all prepared well beforehand. A lot of the Mets I know well, but Kana coming from Oakland, I didn't know him as well, so watched probably a little bit more video than I even normally would. So, but Rob Thompson does a great job, too, in letting the players know in our pre-series meetings about, this guy does that, this guy does this well, he spins this way better than that way. So, a lot of preparation goes into it, and it's nice when it shows up in the game and it works out for us.
Is that nerve-wracking? I mean, like, literally your call by
with two outs.
Two outs, waving him in or holding him. That's obviously could be a huge moment, right? Momentum buster or momentum gainer. Like, are you nervous when you're doing that, or is it you're just in the moment?
No, I think it's you're just in the moment. I think it's exciting. I tell everybody it's the closest thing you can get to still playing, being a coach, because you're actually on the field. You have the crowd. You have that little bit of energy in you. You're in the dugout and you have that a little bit, but you're not impacting the game exactly in the moment. Joe makes pitching changes and pinch hit and lineups and things, but in the moment, it's as close as you can get to actually playing. So I really enjoy it. and I'm lucky to be here, and it's been fun.
Yeah, and well, Castellanos, I guess you have to we brought him over, obviously, and you know the abilities of each of our players in terms of how well they run the bases. What did you know about Castellanos when he came over?
Well, he can run. I mean, he's surprisingly, he's a big guy, and he runs well for a big guy. So, I mean, obviously, like I said, we've looked at all his sprint speeds and all that stuff, and Paco does a great job with these guys, keeping them in shape. And Costi's working all the time in the outfield, so during BP, I'm watching him run and just, you know, getting a feel for him. I got to see him run a little bit in spring training, but you're right, to your point, when you first get a guy for the first couple of days, you're kind of like, you know, trying to figure out. You watch video, and you can watch that all you want, but you'd like to see it in person, that guy make his turns and know how fast he is and things like that. And he made some great turns around the bases that yeah. – that got him there.
And you know, I guess some, you know, the team speed isn't maybe a traditional team speed when you think of having, you know, we have Kyle Schwarber leading off, you know, it's not, you know, Juan Pierre or a traditional leadoff hitter. In terms of the team speed, you can still be a good base running team without just all out speed, right?
Yeah, I think if you look the last couple years, we've been in the top in some metrics that measure base running, and we haven't had a bunch of burners. You know, I think there's times when JT, our catcher, is the fastest guy on the field.
Our two catchers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Stubbs is, yeah, Stubbs can
I mean,
run
I saw
now.
Him
yeah.
make that, Stubbs make that bunt the other day, and he flew down there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He was like a 4-1 to first base on the bunt or something like that. And, but we do have a lot of good base runners and guys that really care about running the bases, which is really important. You know, all the way up and down the lineup. And again, you know, Paco stays on him, and we were talking to him about every advantage we can get. And going first to third and things like that. So you're definitely right. You don't have to be fast to be a good base runner, and we got some guys that are good base runners.
How much do you preach the first to third? And I asked that too because, John, 1993, the guy that always pops in my head is Dave Hollins. Dave Hollins was just a great base burner. He's not a guy you would think is a burner, but he could go first to third. Harry would always say, he's like a linebacker. I mean, you got this big hulking guy coming at you, you know, built like a brick house. But he was a guy who could always get to first to third. Do you guys really preach that too?
Yeah, definitely. Any time you can get first to third, it puts a lot more pressure on the defense. You know, you go first and second, and you kind of feel like, okay, well, you know, we still got a chance. We can give up a single and hold them or throw them out of the plate. You get first and third, and there's a lot more pressure on the defense. There's a lot more options we have offensively to do things. So we preach it a lot. I know Paco at first base lets those guys know exactly where the right fielder is. Make sure you check him. If this ball's hit a little bit to his right, you'll be able to go. If he hits it a little bit to his left, he throws better, so you might not be able to. So, again, we preach it a lot. We're trying to always take extra 90.
Who is the coach that works on the slide? Because what I'm always impressed with is that when a guy's rounding third, he's coming in, and it's going to be a tight play, how good they are as far as, like, getting to the outside and then reaching out their hand, getting underneath, trying to get underneath the tag, and just swiping almost at the outside of the plate. Right? It's almost like a science. Yeah. In that, right? Instead of just coming in, sliding directly into home plate, it's kind of avoiding the tag and kind of sweeping through.
Yeah, there's a couple different – we don't really have anybody that coaches it. We talk about it a lot. I mean, it's one of those things that's hard to practice, really.
Right.
You know, you don't want guys
get
out
hurt.
There sliding on the dirt and stuff like that. They slide enough and get banged up enough. But we do practice sliding in spring training on some pads and things like that. But none of the spectacular slides. But I think that just comes naturally. And we talk about it all the time. Sometimes the best way is to slide directly in, hard, feet first, into a catcher. And sometimes, you know, it's better to go wide. So, you know, I think it just shows you how good athletes these guys are, that they can make that decision, you know, 15, 20 feet away and just make things happen.
Yeah. And you mentioned a little bit technology. How has technology changed the way you approach coaching third base?
Well, the video is unbelievable now, and a lot of it still goes back to watching video. You know, you want to trust your own eyes, and we get a lot of information from, you know, our scouting staff and things that is very important. But to me, trusting my eyes is still the number one thing. And the one cool thing here that we had built in the last 5 years is one is a sack fly sheet, which gives me information on each runner we have in the lineup and each outfielder. And it says about the depth that we think if the guy just standing there and catches the ball that he can score on. And then if he goes left and right, back and forward, those depths change for each guy. So it takes into account the velocity, his exchange. Doesn't take into game state, which, you know, I have to determine. And then we also have a post-mortem, which is I asked him the first year here. I said, I know everybody's really good at this, at second-guessing third base coaches especially, but can we build the best second-guessing machine you've ever had and then have a post-mortem and say, you know, what was the percentage according to the play, how fast the guy threw the ball, how fast our runner was running, where he was when he got the ball, what are the percentages that he's going to be safer out at home, and then what are the percentages that I guess – that was a good play or wasn't a good play. So to match him up and figure out, well, yeah, could I have been more aggressive in that send? Should I have been less aggressive in that send? Even though they're safe, sometimes it is just as important when a guy's safe at home to go back and look, did everything go right? Because sometimes, you know,
might have been luck. Might have been.
Sometimes
been
you wave them past, right, and you just look up and say, "Oh, please,
yeah.
Please hopefully show this one offline."
Right, right. Yeah. Off center. Yeah.
Now, how about signs? Like, where are you involved in signs these days? Because, you know, the other thing I was going to say is the manager is obviously the most scrutinized, especially for second guessing. But, you know, more than the bench coach, more than the first base coach is you, the third base coach, right? Because you're out there, you're exposed. Everyone knows when you did something great, but also everyone, you know, can second guess if you felt. You know, you send somebody in and they get thrown out. But I guess where does that come from? Does that come from the manager working on the signs, just coordinating with the first base coach?
So it just comes from Joe. Joe gives me the signs, what he wants, and then I give them to the players, and Paco sees them from me.
Okay. Yeah.
Pretty simple.
And how often do you switch up the signs?
Depending on how our roster is, not as often as you'd think, probably, but I mean, if our roster is pretty consistent, we don't make any trades, or, you know, we're not playing a team that had a guy lately, you know, you use the signs most of the year.
So signs are staying in the game of baseball. I mean, it's crazy now that we're using the technology for catchers to relay pitches to the pitcher. You know, to me, it's like, well, boy, that was a part of the game for 100 years, you know, so, and that's been, it might be completely eliminated if everybody uses that technology. No, you don't see any change in how we give players signs when they're at bat?
I think it's going to change. Okay. I got a feeling it is. I got a feeling it's going to be very similar to the pitch com that we're using for the pitchers and catchers, just because of speed. If you think about things, watching the pitch com work at the beginning, I was like, I don't know about this thing. And then we were actually in spring training playing against Baltimore, and they used it, and I noticed how fast the pace was. Mm. We played like a 2-hour and 10-minute spring training game, which is, as you guys know, unheard of, right?
Yeah.
And so we started talking about it and a little bit more and more interesting in it. And so, you know, I think if it speeds up the game, keeps the flow of the game going, I think it's better for baseball. I was really probably against it, but the flow of the game. So I think I could see something to the effect of the guys having a speaker in their helmets and then Joe just pushing a button, me hearing it, them hearing it. There's no more stepping out and things like that. So if it can keep the pitch clock out of the game and we can just get the flow of the game going, I'm all for it.
And for those that don't know, right now they put in, they're using it right now, is that the catcher has, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Dusty, the catcher has like a wristband with, and they can hit certain buttons, right, that goes to the pitcher's wearing an earplug, right?
So there's a device that goes in their hat, and it's essentially a speaker. It can be in Spanish or English. The catcher has 9 buttons on his wristband, and each one represents a different pitch, and then each one represents a different location, and then you also have 9 more ways to push the button to signal pickoff, pitch out, things like that. And then you can have – the rule right now is the pitcher and the catcher have one, and then 3 more fielders can have them. So right now we have the middle infielders, the second baseman, shortstop, and the center fielder have it in.
Hmm. And eventually you think that'll go more people or – or is that the only really people that need to know?
It could go more. I know there's some colleges. Vanderbilt's using some stuff where everybody has one. I think, you know, on the offensive side of signs, when guys are on base, I think everybody will have one eventually in their helmet, and it'll just be a lot quicker.
Yeah, and then you can make the transition to signs, you know, the signs to the batter.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, we don't have you for a long time, Dusty, but we'd love to talk to you about just a little bit your career. You know, it's really fascinating. I think we're always fascinated, John, with somebody when you're a kid and you grow up in a surrounded about around baseball as you did with your dad, John, being a big league player. What was it like growing up around the Kansas City Royals organization mostly, right?
Yeah. So my dad was with the Royals, still with the Royals. Took a brief little detour to Boston for 1 year and Anaheim for 2 years. But other than that, really was with the Royals his whole career as a player and manager. It was neat. I didn't know anything different. You know, I would just go to the ballpark with dad, run around, hit in the cage, you know, run around the stadium. You knew everybody. And back then, obviously, you know, the security or whatever, you could just go wherever you wanted it.
Right, right.
Nobody cared. Oh, that's a Wathen kids there. You yeah. know, just running around. So it was great. Had a good time. Kansas City is a great town. Kind of a small town atmosphere. So, you know, we grew up in the same town as at the time, a lot of players, kids. So our little league team, we finished second in the nation 1 year. We had Corey Otis, Amos Otis's son, and Jamie Splittorff, Paul's son, Dennis Leonard Jr. We had a couple more, I think.
It's a pretty good team right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was fun. We had a good group of guys, good group of kids, and a very family-oriented place, so it was a lot of fun.
Now, you were 7 years old, right, when the Phillies played the Kansas City Royals in the World Series. Your dad was a catcher for the Royals. Do you remember that? I mean, obviously, you're not that young, so, you know, what was that like? Did you go to any of the games?
Went to the home games, and then we went, when they came to Philly, we went up to my aunt's house in Iowa and watched it from there. And we had big plans for steak and lobster when we got home, and we ended up with hamburger.
All right, here's my question. I only have one question for you, Dusty. Did the Philadelphia Phillies make you cry in 1980?
I don't think so.
You didn't cry?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think I was just – I mean, it was just – I was born in Double A,
right.
So I'd seen a lot of stuff. And the team was good, and I probably didn't really understand the impact of what was going on yet, so –
But 12 years old is basically when you're – I think of 12 years old as like the magical time as a sports fan, and that's when the Royals won the World Series, when he's 12 years old, right?
Yeah.
His
yeah.
dad's on the team.
In 85, right, yeah. right.
I was in the clubhouse for this. So that's a good story. I was in the got to celebrate with the team. So, you know, all those guys grew up in the clubhouse every day with them. So after they win the World Series, we're standing outside waiting to go in. And they say the wives can go in, but the kids can't. And my mom says, no, no, my kids go in way before me. They're more into this than I am. This is more their thing. So we got to go in, and you know, I got dumped in laundry buckets and champagne poured all over me and stuff like that. So that was a really fun time.
But also must be cool, too, and I was thinking about this, Bo Jackson. Bo Jackson. So Bo Jackson was arguably the biggest athlete in the game at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were a kid. So what was that like when you see Bo Jackson, who's this larger-than-life football guy, baseball guy, you know?
Yeah.
Who knows Bo?
So, actually, Bo went to Auburn, as everybody knows. Hal Baird was the head coach at Auburn. My dad and Hal Baird were minor league roommates for years. So I knew Bo right when we signed him. When he got to the big leagues, he came over to the house for dinner because Hal was coming down for his opening weekend or opening day. He was there. So I knew Bo really well. So, yeah, I've got some good stories about Bo. Probably not good for the air, but he's a great guy. But, yeah, it was neat. I guess one story is, you know, knowing him as a little kid and then as I grew up and seeing him different places and here and there, I went to go pick up my mom one time when I was in college, and I was a little bit late getting there. And I pull up to the curb at John Wayne Airport in Orange County. And who's standing there? Bo's standing there, and my mom. Bo was on the same flight, and he aired me out for being late. You never be late to pick up your mother or whatever. So, but there's lots of stories like that. But Bo's a good man, and, you know, it was fun being around him.
And then going back to that 1980 team, I read that. I know George Brett was a real close friend of the family, and I loved it because I did read something where you guys would have kids versus the player days, which we do a version of that here you know, in Philadelphia with our players, a family day on the field. But it sounded like that was a great time, and George Brett was in the middle of it all, huh?
Yep, George always used to pick one kid at the last kid to hit. And he would throw at him, and we'd charge the mound, and we'd tackle him and everything like that. And so, it was fun. I mean, Ron Luciano did almost every year somehow he ended up being there.
That's cool.
And so I got a lot of cool pictures with him, you know, as big as he was behind me, and I would be the catcher and stuff like that and the team. So, it was a lot of fun, a lot of family stuff there. A lot of stuff you could do back then that you know, you really can't get away with now.
Well, another cool thing that I read about was that Brett Saberhagen and you, I guess you were in middle school at this time. You were out at shagging flies with him at Fenway. Mm-hmm. And I guess Brett had the idea of burying some money in the sod.
So he slid and caught a ball and pulled a piece of the sod out. And he said, you know, hey, go in my wallet, get a $100 bill. We'll put it under there and we'll come back next year and see if it's still there. So he did it. It's probably still there.
That's funny.
Yeah.
We got to also talk about, we're in the presence of greatness, John. You know, Dusty is a career 600 hitter. He went 600 hitter.
You're already one for one on your quiz, by the way.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah,
you just blew the quiz right there, but that's all right. Well give me an advantage.
I'm probably the only guy, I always say this, I'm the only guy that would wanted a chance to lower his batting average.
Three for five.
Yeah. And what did you know this, Tom, that he got his opportunity because two of the catchers went on maternity leave. It wasn't maternity leave back then.
Yeah.
Right where they're going to become new fathers.
Yeah, A.J. Hinch and Brent Main.
Yeah. Now, Dusty, you had 14 years in the minor leagues as a player. What was it like in terms of, I guess you always wanted to have that shot. You must have had some times of frustration.
Yeah, I think so. I think, originally my goal was to try to sign. I was a non-drafted free agent, try to sign, play long enough to get some credibility to coach. It's pretty much all I wanted to do. And luckily, 14 years later, I was done playing. But, I had some good years. I had some frustrating years. I mean, I played in Venezuela, made an all-star team that year, came home, couldn't find a job, ended up getting a job, bouncing around after getting – my hand broke. I was with the Marlins, broke my hand, got to play with my brother there. We were roommates on the road. He was a shortstop. I was a catcher. That was pretty cool.
That is.
And then the next year was the crazy year that I got to the big leagues, actually. I started with San Diego, got traded to Milwaukee, got hurt, got released. A couple days later, went to Kansas City to AAA, and then they didn't call us third catcher up in September. And, Brent and AJ's wives were pregnant and actually played for Brent's dad in college. Mm.
Well, and you, but that's something you always saw yourself as a coach.
Yeah. That's something I always wanted to stay in the game, and I love being around the game. And so I think early on in my playing career, I kind of, gravitated towards managers and asking questions. And my last year playing, actually, the last 2 years I played for John Russell.
Right?
Yep. And so JR, we had a great year in 2006 when we were last year in Scranton. Then we moved to Ottawa, and we had a terrible year. And about July, end of July, I went to JR and I said, hey, man, I think this is it. I think I'm going to be done. My knee's bothering me, and, I'm looking at the lineup. I don't really care if I'm not playing anymore. And so I was like, I think that's it. And he looked at me, and he was so excited, and I was like, oh, what's this? And he was just excited to have, like, a project. So right away, grabbed me, taught me how to coach third base, taught me how to look at, do the reports that the managers have to do in the minor leagues and all that stuff, and then luckily, right after the season was over, I went to talk to Steve Novarita and Bill Dancy, and they hired me as the Williamsport manager.
Awesome. And I think being a catcher, when John Russell was also a catcher, being a catcher gives you kind of a natural advantage in that, in the sense that you're really the quarterback of the, you're guiding that, as a catcher, you're basically the quarterback, you're leading the team right there, right? You're behind everything. You came into managing the Williamsport Crosscutters, right, in 2008. And I tell you what, your managing career was unbelievable. The Lakewood Blue Claws did great there. Clearwater, Redding, then finishing up at Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. I mean, you really had a tremendous managing career in the Phillies minor leagues.
Yeah, a lot of good players. It was a good time for us in the minor leagues at the time. I mean, obviously it was a really good time in the big leagues too. But when the big leagues is doing well, it's a little easier in the minor leagues. And we had good players in the minor leagues that were coming through. So, I was lucky. And it was a fun time. I mean, I loved managing the minor leagues. Who knows what's going to happen in the future. Maybe that's how I end my career.
What was your style? Were you more of like a player's coach? Were you more of a disciplinarian? What's your style?
Dusty wasn't a disciplinarian.
Sometimes you got to lay down the law. Right. I always say, it helped me being a parent or a father. Because it's a lot like your kids, right? They're not going to always love you, but in the end, they'll come back and they'll realize you wanted the best for them. So I obviously wanted the best for all my players, cared deeply for all of them. I mean, I've been to Hawaii for weddings. I've been, you know, all over the place. So, you know, you have to have tough conversations with your kids sometimes, and sometimes you have to have tough conversations and discipline with your players. And, you know, it's neat. I saw one yesterday. Jeremy Barnes played for me in the minor leagues here. He's assistant hitting coach for the Mets now. And I told him, I said, I got a couple guys in the big leagues actually now that are coaches. I said, geez, I'm getting old, man. I'm really getting old. And he says, no, it just means you did a really good job.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's neat to hear things like that.
Well, and how was it? Because I know that was kind of your thing. You joined the Philly staff in 2018, and it's like, oh, you know, Dusty has seen a lot of these young players in the minor leagues. Did that help you when they came up here? You were familiar with their game?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, at the time, 18, you remember back, it was, you know, Knapp and Alfaro and
Hoskins,
and Reese,
man.
and JP and – Nick Williams.
Scott Kingery.
Scott Kingery, yeah. So all those guys I had through the minor league. So definitely helped. And I think it was probably one of the reasons that, you know, Cap gave me a shot on the staff was to kind of help, you know, bounce ideas off me. How do I go about talking to this guy and that guy? And I think that's an important thing in any organization. When you bring in a new manager, to have some cohesiveness from the minor leagues and to keep a couple guys on your staff that – they kind of know what's going on in the organization. And sometimes I think a new manager gets hired somewhere and all of a sudden they just fire everybody. And I think, you know, there's some reason to look into why are these people here and why should they stay here maybe. Maybe not all of them, but, I mean, I think Vuk's a good point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, Vuk was that constant for all those years. And there was a reason he was here for all those years with a bunch of different managers. And I think that's important. It doesn't happen a lot anymore. But I think I got lucky in that case.
When I think of Vuk, too, I think of as a third base coach, just the wave. He had the windmill wave, right? Right.
Dusty was windmilling last night. I saw the tape.
I mean, when you go to the gym, do you have to work out your arm that way, like some of the exercises, to make sure you don't pull anything when you're doing the windmill?
Definitely doing shoulder exercises all the time.
I'm glad you mentioned Vuk, because you got Vuk and Larry Boa, you know, two just guys who earned just probably the most respect of anybody who's been through this organization in the last 50 years. Did you have much of a rapport with both those guys?
Well, Vuk, unfortunately, you know, passed before I got to really, you know, I was around him a little bit, but, you know, he passed before I really got to. But, you know, I hear all the stories, obviously, from Dallas and, you know, when Dallas was with us still and Larry and stuff. So, I mean, I feel blessed just to be around him for the brief period I was around him. But yeah, Bo has been great. I mean, you know, talked to him on the phone, around him in spring training, around him here. I mean, he's wealth of knowledge, obviously, and knows exactly how this city handles things. When I first got to the big leagues, when I was in the minor leagues, being around him, you know, coming up in September and helping out. September's talking to him. I mean, he's just, he's a special person, and we're lucky to have him here.
How about Charlie? I know you've obviously worked with Charlie very closely.
Yeah, Charlie's great. You know,
will Charlie talk baseball with you, Dusty?
I mean, another guy. I mean, just blessed to have those two. They've been in spring training with us every year for a while. You know, now COVID stunk because they couldn't be around, and it was great to have them back this year. But yeah, I mean, talking hitting with Charlie, talking managing, talking, you know, situations. I mean, the one year, you know, when he took over as interim manager, I got to have him sitting right next to me, and we would talk out situations and, hey, what do you think about this? What's that? I mean, it was really cool to have him around. And, you know, obviously he's a great guy to tease with and joke with.
He's
the
best.
Yeah, you can really get on him, and he can get on you, and he's always got a good story.
We had – so the Castellanos press conference down in spring training. I'm down there along with everybody else down there for the press conference. We're all waiting. You know, there's a kind of little buildup. We can't wait for it to happen. And Charlie just ambles in from the field, right, and he cuts right through the
– gets a hot dog.
He cuts right through the lunchroom and just literally walks past the table. And everyone, all the writers, the front office people, everyone's looking at him. And he just kind of just, again, walks through, and he goes – what's up, fellas? And I mean, it's not funny in itself, but it's Charlie just walking through, and he's like, you know, hey, what's up, fellas? Like,
I think he was making his way to the hot dog.
He's making his way to the hot dog,
and then on his way.
All right.
I know we're going to get into the quiz. We don't want to leave Dusty. I have one other question for you, Dusty. You started in 2008, Williamsport. Did you get the call up like a lot of the managers or coaches from minor league teams do when we were in the postseason that year or in 2009 or any of those years?
Yeah, so 2008, they brought everybody here. Obviously, the Phillies, you know, it's first class as it gets. My wife and I came, went to the games, 3, 4, 5. Well, we ended up trying to hang around and ended up watching, you know, us win it from home because of the rain and everything, whatever. But we were here for those couple days, you know, had great parties afterwards. It was great. Especially, it was kind of neat because it was my first year managing, but I'd played with all those guys, you know, Burl in the fall league in 1999, you know, played with Chase in spring training, all those guys. So it was neat for me to kind of be able to be here and see that whole thing. And then in 2009, my son was born during the NLCS. So my second son, our last one. And so they said, you know, we're going to go to the World Series or whatever. And so I'm like, my wife's like, I can't go. And we had a baby like 4 days ago. She said, take Huck. So I called, and that's my oldest son now. He was, I think he was 5 or 6 at the time. Wow, so, nice. Yeah, he came.
That's awesome.
And we did all the stuff, you know, a little bit less after the game, but it was neat. Right. You know, he got to come to the game. He still remembers that stuff.
That's great.
It was a good time.
And before we get to the quiz, too, last question is, your dad, they called him the Duke because he did a John Wayne impersonation. Mm-hmm. How good was his John Wayne impersonation?
Real good. It's really good. Yeah, it's really good. And not only that, but I think he has every – well, at the time, he had every John Wayne movie on VHS. And okay. I mean, he watched them all the time.
That means you watched them all too.
Yeah, I've seen. I've
so he knew all the lines.
I've seen a lot of them. Yeah,
it's like us with Caddyshack, John.
Yeah,
right. Well, I'll tell you, Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Really
terrible. He actually had a thing.
Why'd I say Pilgrim?
Well, that's what John Wayne said.
Okay. He had a thing in Kansas City where they did a charity thing, and it was Run with Duke was what it was called. So every time he stole a base, it was for cerebral palsy. He donated money for charity. So yeah, the Duke nickname stuck and. You know, still to this day, a lot of people, you know, how's Duke doing to me?
Yeah, tremendous.
Yeah.
Big day because we have Dusty. But it's also a big day, John, because we have a new musical introduction for the big quiz.
So, from Skip Denenberg.
From Skip Denenberg. So I know I have to do this the right way. I got to introduce this. So it's like, John, do you know what time it is?
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stump you with Brazier's Quiz.
So did I do it right? And what a song, by the way. You know, we've got another theme song.
On it.
He's been working on it, huh?
This podcast is getting better and better, Tom. I'm telling you. The guests,
more and
the
more
music,
professional.
But now, Dusty, are you ready for the quiz? I know you are an avid listener, so I didn't have to shock you because a lot of people are like, wait a minute, I got to do a quiz?
A quiz.
But you probably know you have to get 6 out of 8, right?
6 out of 8.
6 out of 8. It's all about your life, so you should do pretty well. And Tom, I know Dusty's got to be a big Fanatic fan. He's got a lot of kids,
Well,
too.
The Fanatic birthday is coming up on April 24th, John. Citizens Bank.
7 o'clock Fanatic game.
7 o'clock game on a Sunday. ESPN took the game. And usually, you know, that's a big day for kids. So we're hopefully it's 7 o'clock. It was 8 o'clock when they did this to us years ago. But we're giving away a T-shirt. It's a kid's size. Huck is probably how old is he now?
He's 19.
I was just going to say.
Gus will take one. He's 12.
There you go. There it is.
Citizens, right?
Yeah, thanks to Citizens, we got a great T-shirt that day. April 24th, Fanatic birthday.
All right, Dusty, right here, 6 out of 8. Are you ready?
All right, let's try it.
All right, you went to Blue Springs High School in Blue Springs, Missouri. Which one of these celebs did not go to Blue Springs High School? Now, I know there's like 4 high schools in Blue Springs, right?
There was one when I was there.
Oh, okay, one. All right,
there was
good.
Only one when
and
I
that
was
makes
there.
It easy because I didn't know if I might have gotten
how
it wrong.
How many celebrities went to Blue Springs High School?
There are a lot.
Really? Is that
I'm
right?
telling you. I looked at it a lot.
When we have like the L.A. guys on Burl.
Oh, there's millions.
It's like, oh, you know.
No, I'm telling you. Blue Springs is very popular.
Okay,
so, all right,
go
so
ahead.
A, Brandon Lloyd, former wide receiver for the Patriots. B, John Sunvolt, former guard for the Sonics, Spurs, and Heat. Liddell Betts, former running back for the Redskins and Saints. Ty Domi, former NHL tough guy, Maple Leafs. What do you think?
Ty Domi did not go there.
No, yeah, he's from Windsor, Canada. He did not go to Blue Springs High School.
My wife's from Port Dover, Ontario. So.
Oh, is that right?
We went to University of Windsor.
I did not see it right there.
You knew.
I stumbled right into that one. All right. You also went to Cerritos College, right?
Cerritos
College in Norwalk, California. Another place, Tom, that I saw. I could have chosen about 15, 20 celebrities here.
Go ahead.
Which of these celebrities did not go to Cerritos College? Okay. Bobby McFerrin, right? Don't worry, be happy. Mm-hmm. Joe Gibbs, Super Bowl winning coach for the Redskins. Charles Nelson Reilly, panelist for Match Game 76. And Rod Barajas, former Phillies catcher. The catcher that Scott Palmer messed up his name at the Christmas party when he had to announce Rod Braz. I think he said Rod Braz.
So Rod Brajas went there because I came there my sophomore year. I only went there 1 year. Rod was supposed to be the catcher his freshman year. They moved him, Rod, to first. I caught that year.
Really? Wow.
And then Rod caught the next year. Charles Nelson Reilly, because I've listened to the show. It was either him or Soupy Sale.
Soupy Sale, that's right.
Exactly
right. Dusty Nose.
Or Fanny Flagg or Brett Summers or any one of those. All right, two for two. In 2007, you played for the Reading Phillies. Which one of these players was not a teammate that year? Okay, 2007, Reading Phillies.
I played one game in Reading.
Did you really?
Yeah. I was there for a weekend, but I'll...
Wow. Only one game, because it was the Lynx that same year, and then you got...
Yeah, so what happened that year was I was splitting time in 2007 in AAA with, what's his name? That's terrible.
Alfaro?
No. It was our second-round pick.
Darno?
No, way before. Managed Darno. Anyways, and then Coastie got sent down for something for the weekend, and I wasn't for sure if I was going to retire, so I asked them, I said, can I go on just the restricted list or something? They said, actually, can you go to Reading for the weekend? One of the catchers there asked to go home for a wedding, and I said, sure, here's the deal. If I can go home on Monday to see my kids, and they said, yeah, sure. So I played Saturday evening. I got there Friday, played Saturday. And then didn't play Sunday, got on a plane, went home.
And went home.
Yeah.
Oh, well, in that one time, we'll see if you can remember the teammates.
Wow. Okay. That's hilarious.
Who was not on that team was Mike Costanzo, Michael Bourne, Kyle Kendrick, Chris Coast.
Chris Coast wasn't on that team because he was, well, not at the same time he wasn't. Costanzo was there.
Yeah.
Bourne was not there because he was in 07. He was in Ottawa with us before he got called up. Or no, that was 06. He was in Scranton. It would have been Bourne.
You're
never,
correct.
Never played.
You're
there.
Correct.
But Coastie did play
all
there.
All right.
I think
Scott Brandt's going to give me a lot of grief on that one. He's our official
quiz. We thought
quiz
you screwed
critique.
Up another question.
Yep. Your dad was a catcher on the 1980 Kansas City Royals. We mentioned that. Who lost to the Phillies in the World Series? Who led the team in wins that year for the Royals with 20 wins? Was it Dennis Leonard, Paul Splittorff, Rich Gale, Larry Gura?
Dennis Leonard.
Dennis Leonard, you are 4-for-4. Dang. In 2009, you managed the Lakewood Blue Claws to win the league championship. Who was not on that team? 2009, who was not on that team? Jim Murphy, Justin DeFreitas, Dominic Brown, Travis Darno.
Dominic Brown.
Dominic Brown was not on the team. 5-for-5. You already got the sixth question. What's your career Major League Baseball batting average? I don't even have to give it to you. Right?
I gave you that
3-for-5, right? So you already qualified. So we'll see if you can go undefeated, because there's only a couple people that have gone undefeated. So, number 7, you managed the 2017 Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs to an 80-62 record. 4 players on that team had at least 15 home runs. Which one of these players did not? So, 3 of these guys had at least 15 home runs. 1 did not. Rhys Hoskins, J.P. Crawford, Dylan Cousins, Jorge Alfaro.
J.P. Crawford.
No, Jorge Alfaro had 7.
J.P.
Crawford had 15.
Wow.
Yeah,
Hoskins. I thought that was the year in Reading that he had that many.
Hoskins had 29, and Dylan Cousins had 27.
Yeah, I thought that was the year. The year before, I was thinking that was the year in Reading. We were in 16, but sometimes they play. Yeah.
Dylan Cousins, is he still in baseball?
No,
or
last year he was playing
football.
In AAA. Well, he was trying to play football, but last year he was playing in AAA briefly with Milwaukee. I think. I don't think he's with anybody right now.
That's right. He was trying to get into football because him and Reese were, had that great year.
That was 16,
and he was a stud football player, right? He's going to go to Arizona, right? As a defensive lineman.
Yeah. His dad had some shots in the NFL too. I think he had knee problems or something. Hmm.
Yeah, then there was a high draft pick named Dylan Cousins in hockey.
Yeah, that was a circus between the two of them.
Right. All right, last question. See if you can go 7-for-8.
Yes.
Right? Tom, you're going to love this question.
What's this?
You and Andrew McCutchen, we never even talked about that either, would do rock, paper, scissors after he hit a home run. Now, was that – obviously that wasn't scripted because you have to play rock, paper, scissors when he comes around.
Yeah.
Was that pressure on you?
That was Kutch's idea. We talked about things in spring training or something, and he's like, hey, you mind playing rock, paper, scissors when I come around third? I said, no, let's try it. And we did it in spring training, and he's like, yeah, let's do it. I said, all right.
And what was your overall record against Andrew?
I don't know. I won last year, though.
Okay.
I lost the year before because I gave him a bottle of wine.
So that's how you do it. You do it for the year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you did it for two years? No.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 2 years, really.
Okay.
I mean, the 1 year, I think we only did it 2 years. I can't remember the first. I don't think we did it.
All right, so
we
you split.
The first
so you
year.
Split.
Yeah, we split, yeah.
All right. So
I crushed him last year, though.
Well, it looked fun. It was fun from a fan perspective. All right, so you did rock, paper, scissors after you hit a home run. During what time period was the game of rock, paper, scissors invented?
Whoa.
Okay.
Whoa.
Was it during the Bolshevik Revolution, which is 1917, that was led by Vladimir Lenin? Was it during the Han Dynasty of China, which is 202 BC until 220 BC? Was it the Roman Empire, 27 BC to 476 AD? Or was it the Norman Conquest, the 11th century invasion and occupation of England? So was it the Bolshevik Revolution, the Han Dynasty, the Roman Empire, or the Norman Conquest?
This wasn't
part of the quiz.
This wasn't invented at the Wing Bowl or something.
Yeah.
And they did a thing.
It was not invented at the Wing Bowl. It was invented in one of these countries.
I would say during the Roman Empire.
Tom, would you want to be a lifeline or help out?
I think Dusty's all over this. He's studied it and
rock, paper, scissors was invented in China. It was during the Han Dynasty, 202 BC until till 220 BC. And the other question I was going to ask you about rock, paper, scissors is they have an analysis of this, and I don't know how they do this, but do you know what sign is the least used on the first one out?
I do not know.
I would say scissors.
You would say scissors?
I'd say paper.
Paper is right, Dusty. Uh-huh. I would have.
How about that?
Yes, paper. How about that?
Huh. I did win with a lot of scissors.
Did you?
Yeah.
And he was going with the least used one, then.
I guess. I don't know. I feel like
maybe he knew that, and he was trying to do triple reverse psychology.
That's what the whole game's about.
It's all analytics.
Yeah.
Even rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah. Crazy.
Awesome.
Well, Dusty, you have a job to do. We're in the middle of this Mets series. Good luck.
Thank you.
Great job. Thanks for taking the time being a guest on our show.
Anytime. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Dusty. Hey, John, let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about opening day and everything else that's going on around here. We'll be right back after this. And we're back. Philly's backstage. First of all, great dude, right, John? Dusty Wathan, we love Dusty.
The best. And what a great story. I love baseball stories. Talk about a baseball lifer. Again, you know, we had a lot of experience because, you know, Pete Rose's kid, you know, would run around the ballpark. The Boones kids
Ruben Amaro
would run around. Then we saw Ryan Howard. Yeah. His son is now probably 20-something.
But when I'm talking to Dusty, I think Ruben, too, because Dusty was the bat boy for the Royals and just, you know, brought up around those guys and kind of, well, in that same era, too, a little bit, you know, the 80 team and just awesome, though. Great guy. And when he's talking about all the things they have to think of and the positioning of the players and when a guy goes to his left, he's a little weaker than when he goes to his right when he's coming, you know, you're trying to throw a ball in. It's amazing.
And you have a quarter second to process all that. And make the decision.
It definitely is instinct, right? That takes over. I mean, you know, they got to make that decision so quick. So, it was great having them.
All right, Tom, awesome. I got to. We just completed the first four games of the season, and obviously the Fanatic was instrumental in a lot of these. The 4 days, particularly opening day.
Opening day.
What was the Fanatic's day like on opening day?
He was, well, you know, he's a flightless bird, John.
Yes.
And, you know, he's had this issue the last couple years, and, you know, he kind of looked a little different the last couple years. But this was first opening day. The Fanatic's back, looking like he's always looked, and we just wanted to do something special. So we had to kind of convince the Fanatic, you know, who is flightless, to jump out of an airplane.
Which he wouldn't be flightless at that point.
Correct. He didn't understand the whole concept of a parachute. We had to explain it to him. It's like, no.
Did you have to push him out of the plane?
That's what I was doing. I was up in the plane with the Fanatic, calming him down. And, you know, he was starting to hesitate a little bit, and that's when I gave him the old heave-o.
Now, if he had a bad landing, he at least has a belly to support.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he landed right on his head and his snout, which was hilarious, which was perfect, actually.
Right.
And, it was great. What a great way to start the season. Awesome.
And the crowd was going nuts.
Crowd went nuts. It's electric down here. I mean, it was one of those opening days, John. It was the perfect weather. It's the city fired up for the team. Just everything. The A's were in town, which I thought was really cool. People were like, well, that's kind of weird. Why aren't we opening up against, you know, an NL East team or something? But having the A's in town and bringing back that city series, you know, was great. It was the perfect opening day. And it was the introduction of Hugo Blewett, umpire from the 1920s who was cryogenically frozen. He had last umpired his last game
in 1922. So it had been 100 years since he umpired a game. And there he was, standing out there, fifth inning when the Fanatic came out. Of course, this guy.
Wait, is this the guy that got pantsed on the field?
He got pantsed, all right. He lost all his clothes.
He blew it.
He blew it. He did blow it. Yeah, but can you imagine? I mean, this guy goes to sleep in 1922, wakes up in 2022. You know, he never saw Connie Mack Stadium. He last umped at Baker Bowl. You know, so he never saw Connie Mack Stadium, never saw the Vet. Here he is, Citizens Bank Park. You know, there's scoreboards, electronic, you know, music's pumping. And then this green thing, you know, he had no idea, never seen the Fanatic before.
Right.
So he was, and here's the thing about Hugo, John. He was a hard-nosed umpire back then. He once in 1919, but he threw out 147 players and manager in one season, so earning him the nickname Hugo the Horrible, which so he's a hard-nosed guy. And so when the Fanatic came out to dance around him, he wasn't real happy, but of course the Fanatic always gets the
last.
Was
this your backstory, or was this somebody else's backstory?
This was a night at the bar, John. Might have had one or two in me.
Very high-level details.
So, no, Hugo. But it was cool having Hugo out there. He did lose his pants, and we might be seeing more of Hugo Blewett this season.
Well, and not just the Fanatic had a big week, right? But yeah. Tom Burgoyne had a big week, particularly a couple days ago.
Are you talking about the Sixers game?
The 76ers.
Sixers. It was great, John. Remember, we had Matt Cord on as
a
guest.
That's how we got the idea.
I introduced him into our podcast in my Dave Zinkoff voice. And, you know, Matt was like, man, you really do a great Zink. And so he invited me over, along with Franklin, too. Good old Franklin is great over there. He invited me as well. And, went over there, and they kind of planted me and made me part of a contest.
And you know
contest.
What, Tom?
What's
we
that?
Have the audio.
Wait, you dug up the audio?
We have
this?
The audio from the night. Let's go to the audio right.
Oh,
thanks to Graham
goodness.
Foley. We're going to go to the audio right
you
here.
You guys are too much.
It's now time for the Zink LA contest presented by Ticketmaster. We have Narelle and Tom. They're going to go head-to-head in their first best impression of the Dr. J intro by the legend himself, Dave Zinkoff. Let's take a look.
Introduce him to Dr. Julius Erb.
All right. Now it's Tom, it's your turn. You've got to do that.
And from the University of Massachusetts, number 6, 76, and Captain Julius Erb.
What do you guys think of Narelle? Yeah, okay. And what do you think of Tom?
Woo!
Tom is our winner of the Zinkoff contest.
Well, there it was, John. And I'm telling you, John, that was a dream come true for me. I mean, I am not lying. I am not exaggerating. I am totally serious. When I was back in the 80s, I was in a Zinkoff-alike contest. I think we told the story on the air, and I didn't even make it through the first cut because I didn't know how to roll my R's, and that's a three-pointer and 2 minutes left in a quarter. I didn't know how to roll my R's. I got the heave-ho. And so I've always wanted to announce at a Sixers game, you know, I would have loved to have done the whole lineup, the 1983 Sixers starting lineup, but just to be able to announce Dr. J's name in front of a full house.
And you
house.
Didn't know quite what you were going to be doing, right? You knew you were going to be doing Zink, but they didn't really give you full details.
I knew there was going to be Julius Erving. I think they wanted me to say it a certain way, and I said, well, I'm going to say it exactly how Zink used to say
right,
it. You know?
Right. Because all the other guy did, as you just heard, was Julius Erving.
Yeah, Dr. J.
You went into a little bit, University of Massachusetts.
Zink rarely would say Dr. J. He would do it every once in a while, but it was generally from the University of Massachusetts, number
great.
676, or actually serving. So it was awesome, John. And then I got to say this, because to be down there on the floor, which I you know, go to Sixers games, but I'm never down. Yeah, I'm usually up in the nosebleed somewhere, but it's just so awesome to see them do that show every night. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is. I was talking to Matt, and he just said, it's like, you know, hosting a rock show every night. I said, it's like a rock show, and it's also like a Broadway musical in that, you know, you got like, it seems like hundreds of people just flying around with, you know, every time out, there's something going on. The music's pumping. Matt Cord does an unbelievable job firing everybody up. Franklin's out there. They got the dancers. It's just really, really awesome production. So it's just so neat to see the behind the scenes.
I think you and I need to go to a NBA playoff game. We need to go to Sixers, Toronto Raptors playoff game. What do you
right
think?
On. Yeah. Go Sixers. Go All Sixers. Right. All right. We wrapping this up, John?
Wrapping this up. That was a good one.
Yeah,
love
Dusty,
And love talking Fanatic.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time, I guess, on Philly's Backstage.